You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
Dun dun dun! It is episode number 199. Jeff, we are one episode away officially from 200 episodes of Star Wars Comic Madness. Hi, man. How are you?
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping you're gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore. And I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
I feel old. 200 episodes. That's a lot.
More than five years.
Talking Toys, the only reason we're not at 200 episodes is because the way we number the episodes is different. Our main shows are have one episode numbering scheme, and the action figure exclusives have another. And so we're in the 150s on the action figure exclusives, maybe higher, and we're close to 100 on the regular. So we're probably at, when you counter in the mini-sodes, we're probably at like 400 episodes on that show.
Well, welcome back from Brad Camp, Jeff.
No, I'm just saying. I should have thought about that when I was when started numbering the shows, because it leaves something to be desired when you think we're almost to 100 episodes and we've been doing this for almost 10 years. So yeah, I'm saying I prefer the way we're doing it here. So
yeah, and technically, if you want to get technical, we're actually way past 200 episodes, probably two or three months ago. So. But it's neither here nor there. So what a great episode we got this week. We got Dr. Aphra number 4. We got the fifth and final issue of Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars Battle Tales. We've got a little bit of news, but mostly we've got just the joyful banter shared betwixt you and I.
Indeed.
What more can you ask for? Indeed. That's, you know, I think if Conan were asked now what's best in life, that's what he would
yes,
probably
he would.
Reply.
At least I think so. I couldn't really understand him at that point. So,
For the longest time, I thought he said the Woo Masters, and I realized, no, it's the War Masters. So, anyway, news. Guess what? John Tyler Christopher's action figure variants are coming strong, and God bless him, he went with a deep cut. We got the image, and this was on the Twitter feed and the Facebook page late last week, of Bounty Hunters number 6. And... it features the action figure, the Kenner blister pack, if you will, of 4 LOM, but it's actually
no.
Named
he did it
Zuckus.
Correctly because
I, that's yeah. what I mean, though. That's why yeah. I'm saying it's a deep cut because if some people will recall back in the day, and I believe this is your expertise, is it not? So please explain
when 4 LOM, as I call him, and Zuckus came out, 4 LOM was a mail away figure. That's how I got mine. They actually, Kenner, allegedly, they say, switched the name. So the character that was called 4 LOM on the card back was actually Zuckus. And the character that was called Zuckus on the card back was actually 4 LOM or 4 LOM, who was a droid. And I'm a little aggravated that when Gentle Giant did their 12-inch jumbo re-releases, they quote-unquote corrected the names. And that was corrected, I believe, when West End Games introduced some role-playing game in the mid-90s. But Mr. Tyler Christopher has done the right thing, and he's released this picture of the droid that is apparently actually named Zuckus, but or named 4 LOM and called him Zuckus on his action figure variant, which I still contend is a correct name, and that's what I shall refer to him as.
Well, you do you, and that's fine. But here's the catch. Now, here's the question. Because, you know, this John Tyler Christopher action figure variant for Bounty Hunters number 6 is due out October 21st. Bounty Hunters number 7 is at the moment scheduled for November 18th, and it's also got an action figure variant. So what are the odds that it's going to be...
the Gand, the short,
you know, Gand. 4 LOM.
I know is 4 LOM.
I think the odds are pretty high. I just thought that was really cool, you know, because they could have easily just gone the normal route, but you know that's, you know, and JTC has you know in the past said that, you know, this is one of his favorite things, is he loves painting these card backs from Kenner from back in the day. So I just love that he did
and
that.
And he's given himself really even cool. more street cred than he had before by doing this, in my opinion.
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. Otherwise, there's not a whole bunch of new news. We've got, we are constantly updating the Star Wars comics release list because there are always little changes from week to week. And the most recent one, it now shows that the Shadow of Vader's Castle one-shot will be coming out October 21st and not October 14th. Meanwhile, Bounty Hunters number 8 will now be due out December 23rd instead of December 16th. So, just a week delay for both, but that's neither here nor there in the
right. That's nothing when we, went without for several months.
Oh, totally. So, and of course, as always, we update the release list when it's warranted and when there are changes, usually a couple of times a week. Sometimes we're lucky and there's no changes during a week's period. So, but as always, you can find that release list on the Facebook page and, of course, on the Twitter feed as well, both of which can be reached at SW Splash Page Pod. Also, if you haven't noticed, but if you get your podcasts through Amazon Music, you can find us there. We have a page now. And I believe that's pretty much put us on almost all the major platforms.
It's all of them that are available to us. I should say. Yeah, and just a little bit of an announcement for me. Some news, just to remind everyone that a week from today, Wednesday, October 7th, is the triumphant return of Bantha Banter, a Star Wars chat show on Marvin Dog Media. So
I can't wait.
We're going to start dropping episodes every 2 weeks. We did that just because my co-host and I, our schedules are kind of wonky, and so that gives us time to make sure we're not gonna have a lot of missed episodes. So every 2 weeks, every other Wednesday, you will have a new edition of that show with me and my my friend John discussing all of the minutia of the Star Wars universe and a lot of music talk. So
yeah. Gotta love that. So what do you say we dive right in with Dr. Aphra?
Let's do 4. And the first thing I gotta say is I love this cover. At a glance, it looks very simple and basic, but the background and the way the background bleeds into Aphra's vest, this looks sort of like a, not really watercolor, it looks sort of like a lava lamp melting sort of thing behind her. I can't tell where she ends and the background begins, and it's just gorgeous.
That, again, of course, is the awesome work by Valentina Reminar. So, yeah, no, I agree. It's almost like I look at it and I see like a Jovian gas giant swirling storm, and just the look on Aphra's face as she's holding the ring. It's everything to me. This would be a great poster. It really would. So, we could probably, if we could track down an undressed version, it would be a great phone and or tablet lock.
Yes, it would.
Your home screen. So. Oh, we shall always look. Anyway, this is the Fortune and Fate Part 4, The Deal. Written by Alyssa Wong. Art by Marika Cresta. Color artist is Rochelle Rosenberg. Letterer is Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Caramagna. And as we said, the main cover is by Valentina Reminar. The variant cover, which I have ordered, is by Tula Lote, because I'm a big fan of Tula Lote's work. Graphic designer on this one is Carlos Lau. Assistant editor is Tom Groneman. Editor is Mark Panizia. For Lucasfilm, we have senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglane, art director Troy Alders. From the story group, we have Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkukani. And from the Lucasfilm art department, your friend and mine, Phil Shostak. And I tell you, we just, boom, right there. It's a nice way to jump right in from issue
and
number
if you
3.
Recall from last time, we found out that Just Lucky had betrayed all of them and has been in cahoots with Ronan Tagg the entire time.
Yeah, what a jerk.
Well, we'll see just how much of a jerk he is.
Yeah, we will. And we kind of get an impression of that toward the end of end of this issue, which is the penultimate issue.
Was amazed that this was only issue 4, because I could have sworn that this was issue 5.
Well, that's a testament to Alyssa Wong's writing. She has got a very brisk pace that does not make you, it doesn't leave you feeling overwhelmed. And she's got a lot of threads, but not too many in the air all at the same time. But they are all very
easy. And if you recall, I was a bit unimpressed with the ending of issue 2 because it was basically a repeat of issue 1. And
but But clearly exactly.
That's why
again.
I was like, okay, I had some concerns about this creative team at that point, but those have all since been completely obliterated, any concern that I have, because this is just wonderful.
Yeah, no, she is really standing out in terms of writing. And again, I think that echoes the call of, have more women write Star Wars comics. Because it gives us a unique vantage point and a different view. And, we get a lot of story experimentation that so far. Well,
and again, regardless of gender, the more writers we have working on it, the better it's going to be. The more viewpoints we have, period. But like you said, especially if we can get, a different perspective on it than we've seen for the last 40 some odd years, all the better, as evidenced by this issue.
Oh, totally. Totally. Now let's dive right in. We've got Just Lucky. He has collapsed the catacombs over Dr. Aphra, and he's holding, one of the rings of Vail, with the troops, if you will, from Tag's private army. And one of them rightfully says, I think we should have killed her, boss. And I like this because Just Lucky's like, nah, that's not my style. That is, she sure as heck isn't going to like being trapped down there, possibly forever. But we're all just going to do what we got to do to survive. And Aphra knows
that
better than
anyone. And that struck me as, she won't hold it against me, struck me as a bargaining and sort of a justifying and rationalizing on his part. He's like, I'm not a bad guy. I just double-crossed these people who hired me.
Well, Aphra would have done the same
probably
thing, though.
Probably so.
So he knows her. He knows.
Or at least he thinks he does.
He would have expected the same.
He says,
frankly, so would I.
She won't hold it against me, but then the very next panel on the next page is Aphra saying, I'm going to kill him, slowly, painfully, in little pieces.
I love this dialogue. and Black Chrysanthemum is, obviously trying to push up against what appears to be a, almost like an attic door opening, in the ceiling. And he replies, which I took it to be, yes, definitely, I'm going to join you. And then I love how Dr. Aphra follows in. Yep. And then I'm going to kill all those little pieces. So of course we've got Detta, who's just like, well, why didn't Lucky take us out? And Aphra is a little bit mystified by that, but cause she says, yeah, he should have. So and then Aphra says, yep, I'm going to kill all those little pieces too. And then, of course, we kind of get a little minor debate here because Detta's like, well, how come Lucky just didn't take us out? And Aphra, I like this but she's not saying it in a very revengeful kind of way. Don't know, but he should have. And, of course, Eustacia is the only one who realizes, this is a great line. Am I the only one who understands that murder isn't a responsible solution? Which I thought was perfect. It was quite telling from what we've seen of her so far, the first four issues of this.
It is. And Aphra says, well, that's a bust. Sorry, Black K. We'll have to find another way out. And Detta says, Lucky must have contacted Tag that night at the Shadow University. That's how Tag always knew where to find us, which is sort of bringing us up to speed and reminding us, oh, yeah, that's exactly it. And
Eustacia Aka.
Thank you, Aka. I was trying to find the name and it was just escaping me. She says, keep your enemies, your friends close and your targets closer. And of course she says, oh, Professor Aka, like she's about to try to apologize. And Aphra jumps in, escape now, guilt trips later. This can't be the only exit, not when there's a workshop underground. And T, the little droid, shows back up and she asks him what he finds and he runs him downstairs to a chute of some sort. And Aphra says, what could that hatch be? And it's, and Aka says, oh, the garbage, how apt.
Which I thought was wholly appropriate. Yes. And a nice little callback to the events of A New Hope.
Yes. So. And Aphra says, it wouldn't be my first time. Besides, nobody's used the sewers in a few hundred years. How bad can it be down here? Which is a very good point.
That is a very valid point because, it's a dead city. So, it's not like they would expect to be having to worry about, waste or, perhaps creatures running around.
Right. And so they go down inside, and this is where this gets really interesting and weird in that way that only Dr. Aphra can do in the Star Wars universe. They're talking about how it feels like they're walking in circles, and Detta says it's like the walls keep moving, but that shouldn't be possible. And Aphra realizes the walls are pulsing, which they weren't doing a second ago. And she says, I feel like I'm going crazy. And Aka says, you might be. And that's when she says, I had my droid run tests on the bone matter comprising the city. It's alive and it's singing, emitting frequencies that target our brain waves. And we get a nice shot of that great door with a big hole in it now. And she says, as it grows, it mutates and affects its surroundings, spreading its song. The Rings of Vale didn't drive the people of Vale mad. The living city did. It was designed to. The architect's greatest system, security system, gone rogue. And now it's affecting us, making us see and hear things. Because if we don't leave, we'll end up just like the lost architects of Vale, which is who we're figuring
that's exactly,
out.
That's exactly what's happening here, because the entire city has become an ossuary, you know, for the residents. So, you know, and so, and we always knew there was something weird about the vibe of this city, you know, even from the, you know, when they first landed, they were just like, wait, something's not right here. And, you know, if you look at the way Marika Cresta has drawn these walls and these doorways, it's, you know, it's very, I want to say almost like, you know, like a Bosch painting,
yes.
You know, and it's, you know, with you just, and like you had said before on a previous episode, it was kind of like that scene in The Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino and Charlize Theron and Keanu Reeves, you know, where in Al Pacino's office.
Right before they had to blur it all out.
Yeah, it's just that weird shakiness, you know, and melding of tormented souls. And that's, to me, that's what the whole city is. And that's a great explanation, you know, to find that it's actually the city's undoing was the architects themselves.
Yeah, they're like you said, their security system did them in. And it's interesting because Aphra unlocks Detta's restraint. She says, I told you it wasn't a curse. Play nice or I'll make you regret it. So I know that's probably going to come back to bite her at some point. And
I think it will.
Aphra says, looks like how much farther? And Akka says, looks like we're almost. And they walk outside there. So they really were probably walking in what looked like circles, but they were making progress.
It's almost like they were doing parabolas, you know, gradually going higher and higher and elevating themselves up to ground level.
Right. And so they find the ship, and Aphra says, oh, there she is, the Archangel. And immediately, whooshing, everyone get down. These three ships come up, and we get this. I say it all the time, but this is literally an earth-shattering kaboom. It's a great, huge, one-page, almost full page of this explosion.
And then, I believe this is the third iteration of the Archangel she has now lost, I think.
I believe so. Second or third, at least. It's certainly not the first.
Now, I can't wait to see what the next Archangel is going to look like.
We may have seen it here. I don't know.
That's if true.
The ship that she finds is going to be it. And then they blow up the city. And that is, Akka has just had enough. And Detta even looks to be concerned about it as well, because Detta says it's gone, and Akka says the Lost City of Vale, all of it. And they're just raising it. They're just burning it to the ground. And she says, whatever Tag can't have, he destroys, which we've seen.
Yeah,
and even when he can have it, he destroys it, because that's his thing.
He doesn't want anybody else to be able to see it now. So that makes perfect sense. I mean, to me, it's not a surprise move on his part whatsoever.
Not at all.
He's got allegedly what he wants.
So he thinks.
Yeah, but now nobody does. So then we cut back, and you know, we have Just Lucky with the crew. Hey, good job, everybody. Tag's going to make us rich, you know. And then, of course, you know, Just Lucky is noticing that the sound that he had been hearing hasn't gone away yet. And then, of course, everybody is, you know, like, hey, well, we're getting all this money, so, you know, what are you going to do it? And Just Lucky very wisely says, well, don't count your credits yet. And then we get some exposition on Tag himself. You know, Tag's a piece of work. He knows we need the money more than he does. And we see how Tag got Just Lucky to work for him, you know, no matter how obsequious. And it was because he's got a sibling who's got a bad financial situation. And, you know, he's found the weak point, and he's using his leverage. And, you know, this, we see this sort of in flashback. And then, of course, in the present, you know, we hear him say, not Tag, but Just Lucky, if you're smart, the moment you take his credits, you run. And so that's where we jump, and we're back on Cantonica at Canto Bight. And, you know, Just Lucky is off to see Tag, and Tag is very happy. Glorious, at last. The Ring of Fortune is mine. Well done, Lucky. And I just want to point out, I love the colors here. I mean, just throughout, from top to bottom here, it's an amazing panoply of shimmering images without overpowering the eye.
Right, and it looks very much like the milieu that we saw in The Last Jedi as well.
Exactly, which is, you know, which can be very hard to capture, I think, sometimes.
Agreed.
They've done it, but Rochelle Rosenberg has done a great job of capturing the brightness that is Canto Bight. So, And then we get a little, daydreaming by Taga here. Oh, how I've imagined, because he's upset because, Aphra is not there. Eustacia Aka is not there. And he asked for two rings, not the one. And of course, part of it, because he wanted to see Eustacia's face when he destroys the rings. And I love the quote here. The agony on her face would have been exquisite.
Yeah, this guy.
Yeah, he's got some issues.
I'm really hoping the ring drives him insane.
He needs some help. He needs to get some help. But as a result, he says, I'm cutting your pay, a third of the job, a third of the money. And of course, the crew is like, no, you can't. Yeah. And then even Just Luck is like, that wasn't the deal, Tag.
He pulls him close and says, your little brother's enjoying himself at the games tonight. Perhaps you should pay him a visit. Make sure he's still in good health. And Lucky knows the score at this point. He's like, okay, sure thing, boss.
Flexing that leverage.
And then Tag says, in fact, why don't you all enjoy an evening at the Kanto Casino? My treat. And the other guy says, that's not enough to. And Lucky says, we'll take it. Let's get moving.
And I still think that's a bad idea. Even if he offered it on his treat, I still wouldn't accept it.
No, not at all.
It's going to come back and bite you on the butt.
So they get down there. He says, you can't win every battle. They get to the casino, and Lucky finds his brother. He says, you can't win every battle. It's about picking them and knowing what you can't afford to lose. So and I love the way that they've drawn him staring at his brother with this, this affection and love, familial love that he has for him.
And I think that's important because, that's one of the underlying aspects that I've always enjoyed about Star Wars is family ties.
Right.
Is that you look out for each other. And it's nice to see this done in a way that's refreshing where, a sibling doesn't have to get blown up.
Well, at least not yet. And it also gives Lucky it gives us some sympathy for Lucky as well. We understand why he did what he did. It was, to save someone else that was important to him. So you kind of, he can get a little bit of forgiveness from that, from just that.
I think it also kind of parallels Aphra's previous actions that we've seen, in volume one of her series, especially when it came to, her mother and her father.
Right.
And of course, Magna Tolvan, ultimately is, as morally ambiguous as Aphra is, I think Just Lucky is sort of the same way, but he does have an underlying code, and that is, family comes first.
Right. Exactly.
So,
and from there, where they take us back to Aphra and the crew looking for another ship that still works. And, Aka just can't get over it, that monster. She's, very much in the vein of Aphra's father. Her main concern are the artifacts. She's less concerned about the fact that they're in, moral danger here.
No, yeah, because she is genuinely hurt by the loss of the history.
Right. And Kersantan finds what we discover is a High Republic ship. And we talked about before the show that the High Republic
High Republic.
I agree. They're getting a little egregious, and I wouldn't mind them so much were this something, a term that we had been familiar with up until this point. But it would be the equivalent of all of a sudden hearing nothing but talk about midichlorians immediately after the prequels came out original trilogy era comics, it's something that has never been talked about before all of a sudden is the first thing on everybody's mind.
It's cool that they're planting all these little seeds throughout the comics, as we make our big move toward January and the launch of the High Republic. And I think a lot of people who are reading the comics to begin with are going to be aware of the High Republic, but at the same time, it's like it's almost like every issue now. High Republic. Oh, it's a High Republic. Oh, it's a High Republic era. Oh, this is from the High Republic. So, are you high? No, I'm in the Republic. So.
No, you're absolutely right. And she finds out that it's still working. And Aka says, so now what? The rings are gone. So is the city. Centuries of history, my faith in any of you and life's work were all just vaporized. And Detta says, and now Tag has a ring of fortune. And Aphra says, the ring. She says, that's just what I... She says, not the rings, only one. So where's the other? Detta says, in the city. If it was in the city, it's gone now. And Aphra says, but Tag wouldn't have nuked the city if he thought it was still there. I'm missing something. I don't like that. And I love the way she's drawn here.
Marika does a great job capturing this. Because, Aphra is genuinely befuddled. And that's not a situation that Aphra tends to find herself in.
Not at all.
She tends to, leap before looking often, but, at some point, always, she does have some sort of, rough outline of a plan. And now she doesn't. So, but, you know, so she's like, all right, well, look, okay, the smart thing to do is lie low until Tag's fleet retreats. Cut our losses and go home. No one gets disintegrated, which isn't perfect, isn't a perfect win, but it's one I'll take. And, you know, Akka's like, no, I've had enough. Tag, I can't get away with this. Not this time. And then this smile, this smug grin on Aphra's face. I did say it was the smart option, not the best one. Of course, she's got Akka's attention now. So tell us about the best one. And that's where we cut to above, you know, Cantonica. And we've got Tag's private fleet up there. And, you know, they are zooming in this High Republic ship, which I got to admit is actually kind of cool looking. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of these High Republic designs. And, you know, and it's Aphra to Tag. You know, Aphra to Tagger, come in. Is this thing on? Next time you slice someone's droid, maybe do a better job encrypting the connection. You were depressingly easy to track. And again, love how the starfield is drawn. Love how the planetfall is drawn. It's just, it reminds me of the original Marvel run, like when Bill Sienkiewicz would do the covers toward the latter end of the volume one of Star Wars. So we turn the page and, you know, we see Tagus, you know, sir, that ship. And of course, Aphra's like, well, anything, anyway, I've got something you want. After all, what good is a show without an audience? And she finally says, let's see how fast this baby can go. And I have a feeling you're right. I think this might be our new iteration.
Yeah,
of the
I'm hoping so, because it's a great design and everything.
Oh, yeah. So she leads them on, you know, now come and get it. So she draws them all in a chase, and we get a really nice, awesome battle here, which, you know, we don't, you know, we haven't gotten a lot of in this book. I mean, we get it in other books. And
right.
So I'm
but this is not the space battle.
So much
book,
fun.
Usually.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is just a really great page. And, you know, and the way Marika Cresta has drawn this, and the way Rochelle has colored this, and the way Joe Caramagna has lettered this. And the way it's designed and orchestrated, you know, with these little inset panels over the main panel showing the action, I'm really enjoying it a lot. It's just a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so they catch up to them. They say, prepare to be boarded. And Aphra says, you ready? To Akka. And she says, more than ever. So the next thing we see is on Canto Bight, this ship is landing and they're coming out in restraints. All of them are in restraints. And Tag is saying, welcome to Canto Bight, Dr. Aphra, Professor Akka. I trust the trip was uneventful. I'm so very glad you're here. Won't you join me for a chat? And Professor Akka, I have something special to show you that I was afraid you'd miss. And just the gleam in his eye. He's kind of like Joffrey from Game of Thrones.
Oh my gosh, that's a great parallel.
And Aphra says, well, you know better than to keep a lady waiting. And then she says under her breath, I really, really hope this works. So
that was a great way to end it. So, you know, we get a, you know, to be continued in Dr.
And the look
Aphra
that Akka is
five,
giving her as well. So. You know, she's concerned. She's going along with it, but she's not sold.
Oh, totally. And she is putting her faith in Aphra at this point because she really has no other
really,
option.
Really, really fun issue.
So this was a blast. I mean, you know, it was well-paced. It was brisk. It had a lot of good character development, I thought. And, it, you know, it broke some ground that we weren't really aware of before. And, yeah, I'm excited. You know, for how this arc is going to end. They've done a really good job.
So am I. Like I said, I was a little concerned after that second issue ended the same as the first, but everything since, before and since, has been wonderful. So I retract my initial suspicions. So yeah, really great book. If you're not reading the book, again, why do you hate comics? We'll take a really short break and we'll be back to discuss Clone Wars Battle Tales number 5.
Woot woot.
Okay, so that is all there is to say about Dr. Aphra. What say we discuss the final or the ultimate issue of Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars Battle Tales, which is issue number 5?
Definitely so, definitely so. You know, overall, I liked this miniseries. You know, as you know, originally it was meant to be a weekly miniseries. But thanks to the coronavirus, that was...
right.
That was a no-go, but these things happen, I guess. But, you know, that said, I think had this been weekly, I think I would have been a little more satisfied with the fifth and final issue. I'm not saying that it didn't land the jump, because it certainly did. I just think that it would have probably been more oomph to it had it been weekly. And I think, you know, if somebody picks this up in trade, which, you know, and the trade edition of this will be out, at least right now is scheduled to be out December 9th. You know, I think it will be a nice solid ending if you sit down and read all 5 issues at once, you know, over the course of 30 minutes or so.
Maybe so. This is easily my least favorite issue of the ones we've had so far. And again, not to say that it's bad. It's just this, this issue is more what I expected from this book.
Yeah.
The first few issues were far better than I was expecting, which is what I'm used to from Star Wars comics anyway. So the fact that this is just as expected is, and the fact that it's a come down, I think says a lot about the quality of the work that IDW has been doing.
Oh, very much so. And no one should walk away from, you know, our podcast about this thinking, oh, well, they don't like Michael Moretti's work. No, not
at all.
But we like Michael Moretti's work very much. He has delivered some amazing stuff and continues to deliver some really solid stuff. This particular issue, good. But, you know, he's had better issues. Now, however, I will say this. The art, as always, is just utterly phenomenal, you know, and that includes, you know, the intro and the outro art by Derek Charm, but also the interior art by Philip Murphy. And I want to see more Philip Murphy work in Star Wars comics, you know, particularly IDW. I think he's ideally suited to the IDW way of storytelling. And then at the same time, I do want to give a nod to the colorists on both, because Luis Antonio Delgado handled the color art for Derek Charm's work. And then Rebecca Nalty handled the color work for Philip Murphy's artistry. And it just, it's perfect because,
And I especially love the colors on the flashback in this one, the art and colors in that one. I don't know what it is about it. I think it's just the lines on it are, it's not the same heavy. The lines aren't as heavy as they are on the wraparound stories. They're a little, the black lines around them are a little slimmer. And I think that makes all the difference. Something about it. I just love the line work, and the colors are almost washed out, but still vibrant. And I don't know how you do that.
It takes time and talent to do that. And clearly clearly Rebecca Nalty has mastered that art, and the same can be said for Philip Murphy. So, but let's get to the credits first. Of course, as we said, Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars, Battle Tales, number 5, written by Michael Moretti. Art, as we said, is by Derek Charm and Philip Murphy. The colorists are Luis Antonio Delgado and Rebecca Nalty. Letterer and designer, Jake M. Wood. Assistant editor, Riley Farmer. And editor, congratulations, Elizabeth Bry and Denton Tipton. For Lucasfilm, of course, we have Robert Simpson, Michael Siglane, Troy Alders, Phil Shostak, and from the story group, Pablo Hidalgo, Matt Martin, and Emily Shkukani. Chapter 5. As the cover, great cover here. Always love seeing some General Grievous. I'm not quite sure why. But there's just something about the character that I find oddly appealing.
You're not alone. I know a lot of people that do. He's not one of my favorites, and I think it's just because he never wins. He always just runs away.
Yeah.
But I do love the design. I think that character design is outstanding.
Oh, superb. Yeah, very much so. And then, of course, you know, the main covers are by, of course, Derek Charm. There are a couple of variants. There's one with a different color scheme where it's in red. And then there was a retailer-only Darth Maul cover. Which of course has nothing to do with the book.
Right.
So, but you know, again, that's, you know, artists will do that, you know, with specific comic shops, you know, they'll prepare like a run of 50 covers, you know, and it's a great way for the artist to supplement their income. And it fits a niche for a collector, for a specific, corner of the collector's market. So, as I have always said, if an alternate or variant cover appeals to you, then buy it. So if not, then you know, let
then
it go.
Don't. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So we open up and we are on the planet Hisine, where we have been for a while. And this is where we get our intro by Derek Charm and Luis Antonio Delgado on art and color. And
I love it because it's very disorienting. I actually had to go back and reread the end of the last issue because this one starts out and it's so well done. I was like, I remember something happening, but it happened at the very last two panels. One of the battle droids threw one of the a thermal detonator in and it exploded. And this one is so disorienting. And I think it's great because that's what the clones are at the moment.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, and it captures it nicely because it's literally, you know, that opening panel, you have the fog of war.
Yes.
So I thought that was cleverly done.
And the clones are all, you know, they're all present and accounted for. Rex is worried about that. And he's getting a report that the Hisinians, our troops, they all managed to escape the worst of the blast. But as for us being all right, I wouldn't say that. And and that's great because you got them in front of some battle droids with weapons drawn. And of course, these battle droids, you know, say, you know, surrender, Republic scum. And then, of course, you lousy clanker, I'll. And then the other troop says, easy, Rex, easy. After all, being captured isn't the worst thing in the galaxy. And we cut from there. That's one of the, I feel like, one of the most abrupt cuts that we've had. I don't even get the feeling of that from Wayne's World. It's just all of a sudden, Caliban, a moon in the outer rim.
But at the same time, I kind of like that, you know, and again, I think IDW wisely, you know, was they did the right thing by basically having every issue set up with an intro and an outro with Derek Charm as the art, and then using the flashback stories to highlight another artist. And I think that does a nice job because it helps even the most obtuse reader realize, okay, this is the flashback part of the issue, or, you know,
he means me, folks.
Shh, nobody tell him. So, but I'll give yourself a little more credit. Come on, dude.
Slightly more, but no, you're right. And the disparate art style, you know, it's completely different. So you immediately know that you're in a different story. And I even love the way the pages are laid out. It almost looks like this first page almost looks like stained glass, because you get that first panel and then the panel underneath it has that curving arc that comes up.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It's really cool. I really dig it. It's very and you see this throughout this panel layout, and it sort of softens things and again just kind of reminds you that you're in a different place. And I don't know why that decision was made, but I really, really love it. And I especially love because it makes some panels feel like they're being compressed by the panel above or expanded by the panel below. It's really, really effective.
It does. It works nicely. And again, you know, with Philip Murphy's style here and blending in with Rebecca's colors here, you know, we're on, you know, obviously we're on Caliban. It's a moon. It's clearly, you know, it's another snow world, you know, at least they are in a region where it is snowy and mountainous. And these colors that meld up into the skies, and then it offsets nicely the grim color of the snow. And what we find is Kenobi and the clones are prisoners of General Grievous. And of course, I cannot not read a comic with General Grievous and not hear it in that voice.
Right.
You know,
and the planet is called Caliban, which is that a Shakespeare reference or is that a reference to the Marvel Comics character?
I would say it's probably a Shakespearean reference.
I would think so as well. I didn't have anything to add to that. I just thought it was interesting because it's not a planet that we've seen before.
You could even go farther back and just say it's a reference to Greek mythology.
That's probably more likely.
So, you know, if we turn the page and we find Andromeda, then we'll know for sure.
Right. But no, you're absolutely right. I can always hear Grievous's, I always hear it in that voice.
Oh yeah.
And which is great. And again, I love the way he's drawn here. It looks, you know, just like he did in the films.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, and I love seeing, you know, I'm sure we have seen clone troopers in their snow gear before. I don't recall it. It doesn't pop to my mind, but I love seeing it again. Like, you know, I love seeing it in this page.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, seeing Obi-Wan wearing his parka immediately reminded me of Han Solo in The Empire Strikes.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's interesting because you know, Grievous has them prisoners, you know, and you know, you would think he would just execute them, but of course this is an all ages book, and so, you know, he lays down the law. You know, you are my prisoners, and if you care to live for even one more day, you'll do exactly as I command. You will get to work immediately building a lunar ice bridge, and if you complete my task, perhaps you'll one day leave this frozen wasteland.
I have two questions about that.
Okay.
What makes it a lunar ice bridge?
Well, Caliban is a moon.
Right.
So.
Okay, fine. It just, I think the term lunar ice bridge just sounds a little too sci-fi to me, and yeah. I'm not sure why.
It's second, like are we building a bridge to another moon?
It's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was like the rainbow bridge from Thor. secondly, this is Bridge on the River Kwai, right?
Essentially,
Pretty much.
Pretty much. that's where our emphasis is coming from. So, and that's where Kenobi steps up going, you know, pardon me, General Grievous. I hate to interrupt, but we won't be doing any such thing for your separatist cause. What? As clearly stated in the Galactic Accords regarding prisoners of war, no prisoner shall be forced into manual labor or Jedi scum.
He just knocks him down. Yeah, you belong to me, Kenobi. You will do as I say. And this next panel, I love it. Kenobi cowering in, literally in Grievous's shadow.
Yeah, or you will die. And that's really great. That's a great illustration. I love the way it's drawn. So
again, for everything I said at the top about how this is my least favorite, I'm finding a lot that I did love about this.
Oh yeah, there's a great deal to enjoy about it. So, but then you know we get then this is you know the next page is where we get our sort of our backup, you know, because you know we find out apparently this bridge was destroyed by Grievous when he first invaded this planet, and we see the bridge that's broken, and clearly yeah, it's not so much a lunar bridge as it is just an ice bridge.
So, right. Exactly.
You know, and of course, and this is some good dialogue here from Michael Moretzi, because this is Kenobi. I suppose it's a bit of cold irony that we've been tasked with reconstructing it. You know, sir, please don't even mention the word cold. It's hard enough keeping my mind off how freezing I am. Oh, right. My apologies, Gearshift. My point is this bridge is the only way to get from one side of the planet to the next, since we're the ones rebuilding it. Yeah. What happened to all the ships?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, you got transports, you got shuttles, you got jetpacks, you got staffs. Why do you need the bridge? This is just busy work. This is to keep them busy.
I guess it's a plot device.
Yeah, totally. But then I love Cody's thinking here. It would be tragic if the Seppi suffered some kind of accident using our bridge. Tragic indeed, Cody. Password amongst the men. We will build this bridge, but that doesn't mean we'll build it well. Understood? Reading you loud and clear, General. Kansa, Unsa, Una. And then we get the Unsa. And then, wait, what? Snow Ewoks? Is that what we got here?
Basically, that's what we have here. They're snow Ewoks. They're slightly smaller than Ewoks.
Yeah, they're cubies.
This is exactly what this is, and that's my biggest problem with this story is this is a story we've seen before.
Well, you have to remember, this is an all ages comic, so you know, and if you can't get Ewoks in it, why not a cubie?
True. It's too cold for Ewoks, I suppose.
Well, that's true. You know, there's always that possibility, I guess. So, and as far as I can tell, I think this is a new race.
I believe it is.
Oh, I may be wrong, but I you know, would not be the first time I was wrong. So, and of course, I kind of wonder if this is a nod to the QB cat. So, but because there was a sort of a kind of a it's something it's like a Puella Magi Madoka Magica thing. My daughter was telling me about it. So
Nice. Yeah, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, so nor was I. But I think we get a new race, new species here. Very frost oriented, large mouse style ears. Definitely, you know, very much in the vein of an Ewok, except they don't seem to want to eat people.
Right.
And then of course this is where we get almost like our first contact. Careful by this edge, friend. Sir, I believe it's reaching for its parent. Oh no, they must have separated when the bridge was destroyed. The chasm is too treacherous for them to pass, not without the proper tools. Delay my earlier order, Commander Cody. We're going to rebuild this bridge, and it's going to be even better than it was before. And then, of course, you know, yay! Hugs Kenobi. Oh, it's quite all right, my young friend. Unsa, unsa, ziba ze! And then that's where we see even more of them. And then I like this because essentially, yeah, we are getting Ewoks. This, you know, we are getting a similar vein or thread to what we saw in Return of the Jedi, because, you know, they find in the snow, the Kyubey have drawn in the snow them surrounding General Grievous. And that's where Kenobi says, well, you know, because he's one of the clones, are you reading the same way I'm reading it? I believe I am, and I do believe that we have new allies. So, and, you know, they're doing good work here. I thought they were going to, like, build the bridge out of ice, but no, they're actually building it out of material.
Yeah, they actually gave them stuff to work with, and yeah.
Exactly. So, and of course, Grievous, good Lord, man, what a jerk. I expected this bridge to be complete by now.
General, my men and I are working almost around the clock. It isn't easy rebuilding what you destroyed. Your insolence will be the end of you, Kenobi. Perhaps, but not today. So, and then that's where the QB come and attack. I want to say they kind of swarm, but, you know, it's just kind of like, wait, what?
So, yeah. And you know, I'm trying to figure out what they remind me of. The one bringing up the rear definitely looks like an Ewok. But like you said, the ears and everything, they just, I don't know, they're just adorable. But they look sort of like the animated version of the Ewoks that we got in the cartoon.
They are super cute. They kind of remind me of the old Marvel Ewoks comic series.
Yeah, and that was based, I think, sort of based on the cartoon as well. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And of course, I'm seeing all this, and of course, you know, the first thing I'm thinking of is, okay, how do I stat out the QB and play this in Edge of the Empire or something?
Right.
So, you know, this, you know, we're Age of Rebellion, and you know, for one of the FFG games. So, but and so the bottom panel, if you haven't seen this yet, you're gonna love it. It's basically Grievous is standing in the background. He's being literally swarmed by what, 1, 2, 3, 4 QB, two of them are holding onto his legs. And Grievous is like, what is this? What is happening? And there's a battle droid. I believe they're hugging you, sir.
Yeah, and they're all just yelling that, Utsa, Utsa.
Utsa, Zayziba. and he's just like, get off of me. Don't make
he's
me just
shaking and shaking and shaking, but he can't get rid of him.
And the battle droid, again, props to Moretzi here for the dialogue. Would a pat on the shoulder be more appropriate, sir? Get away from me. And then it turns out, my God, we see they run over to Kenobi. You are very brave, my little friends, and you have remarkably fast hands. Mission accomplished. And he's holding a lightsaber.
So we fulfilled our end of the agreement, Grievous. They're standing on the bridge. Now at least let my men go. And Grievous, of course, says, your bridge will allow us to freely move weapons and troops across the planet. Another victory for the separatist cause. You lose, Kenobi. And now you will die. You and your men will die here alone on this frozen tundra.
Predictable to the end, General. I suppose it's time I tell you one important thing that you really ought to know. We are not alone. And Unsa! And a real swarm, although it's still just the four of them. But I think we are led to believe there are even more behind them. And a great splash page here. And again, this sort of barrel shaped panel for the full page. I like it a lot. It could have easily been just the normal rectangle, but there's something about having the slight curves on the top and the bottom.
I don't know why. It makes it look like we're reading something from the past.
It does. It very, very much so does. It's like we're reading this on a holo viewer or something, or we're looking at this, you know, as an image in a history book. And I like that. I'm like you. I am on board for that. So so you've got some battle droids that are like, wait, what? And of course, you know, Grievous is not easily impressed, nor is he easily scared. So he immediately goes, all right, call for reinforcements and get those clones. And of course, the battle droids, which is it? You want us to call for reinforcements or attack? Imbeciles. You sound upset, General. Perhaps you could use a hug. I just my mind's ear hearing Ewan McGregor saying that as Obi-Wan.
So. Exactly. Yeah. It's or even who does his voice in the James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah, James.
That's
Arnold
what
Taylor.
I hear more than this because that's who it looks like.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, definitely. So.
But either one. Yeah. And of course, Grievous is like, you'll pay for this, Kenobi. And the great image of them, fighting on this bridge. And Kenobi says, your threats seem to lose their meaning when we're both holding lightsabers. And, of course, the clones and the QB are making quick work of the rest of the battle droids. Because that one says, let my blaster go, and the clone says, you first, and just pushes him off the ledge.
Great.
So they remind, one of them reminds everyone, the reinforcements are surely to be on the way. We must get to our ship. And he says, don't worry about that, Commander. Follow me. Come on, let's move. It was great carnage, droid carnage. We see, the next page, we see a droid head just flying.
Isn't that awesome?
as they make their way to the drop ship, and Kenobi is left behind fighting Dooku, and he says,
"Not Dooku.
I mean, Grievous. I'm reading the word Dooku, so I said Grievous." So he says, "Dooku has taught you well, General. Tell me, what's it like being the Count's pet?"
Oh.
To which Grievous, I'm guessing, pushes him.
Yes.
Kicks him, and he says, "Yeah." He says, "I'm not his pet," and he pushes him basically off the bridge, right where Kenobi wants to be, I think.
Oh yeah, and then of course this is where Grievous, you know, gets all high and mighty, and you know, just, you know, clearly nobody has listened to that Red Hot Chili Peppers song where they say, you know, if you see me getting high and mighty, knock me down. And he goes, "And you are no match for me. I look forward to adding your lightsaber to my collection permanently." I think not. I was just getting you right where I want you. And the way Philip has drawn this, the look on Grievous's face, the way he's illustrated his eyes.
I know.
You can just tell that, like, you can see in Grievous's eyes, he's like, "Oh, God almighty, I have messed up."
Well, and that tiny, tiny question mark there that's almost imperceptible.
It is. It's totally imperceptible. I mean, I missed it the first couple of times I read it. That's how imperceptible it is. But even then, without it, you can just tell. He's like, "Wait, yeah. What?" So,
and then the next panel, which is, you know, Kenobi and just the rumble behind him. Very effective. You know exactly what's happening. And we see the same rumble in the next panel, and he's causing an avalanche.
A big avalanche, and it's taking down,
and it's destroying the bridge, but I can't tell if it's destroying, it's not destroying the bridge, it's just filling it in.
I think it's filling it in and pushing everybody off the side, so right, you know, and into the chasm. I mean, you know, this is just full on, you know, coming down the mountain, like, you know, like an avalanche coming down the mountain. So,
and of course, they're going to take Grievous into custody, and Kenobi says, "Leave him, Cody. I'm afraid that by the time we dig Grievous out, Separatist reinforcements are on the way. We've jeopardized the QBs enough. Let his droids enjoy unburying him from all that snow." I'm sure the Republic has missed us enough by now. And they say, "General Kenobi, we've got visual QBs on the surface." He says, "Are they all together on one side as planned?" "Indeed they are, sir." "Excellent." Then they blow the bridge.
Yes. And then, yeah. And, you know, and again, you know, he responds. And again, boom. Great lettering here. Love that lettering. That's awesome.
So. Yeah. And then he says, "Well, then that should keep the Separatists off this planet. If all, only all our objectives could be this easy." Easy. What? That's what he said. Easy. And we're back in the present. He said, "I'd hate to see what General considers difficult." He says, "Well, Captain Rex, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that everything is relative." And I love this because we have the shot of the droids about to shoot him. And the droid says, "Ready." And then behind him, you see three lightsabers.
Yeah. Vroom, vroom,
and
vroom.
The clone finishes his thought. "Everything's relative when you're a Jedi.
Aim." And then, "Do not fire." And here's Anakin and Plo Koon and Obi-Wan.
Making quick work of them. And of course, Rex is cutting a little close, wouldn't you say? He says, "Oh, come on, Rex. We had at least another second." They take care of everything. Obi says, "Sorry we're late, Cody. We were still in pursuit of Ventress and Dooku when we received Rex's distress call." And Rex says, "Not to mention, not to worry, General. Everything went as easily as always." Plo Koon says, "I would agree. In fact, you managed to do what we did not. You rescued the Hisinians before they could fall into Dooku's hands. It's all in a day's work, General. Speaking of a day's work, I've just received a word from Master Yoda. We're needed back on Coruscant. Another happy adventure awaits as they take off." And very Vietnam-esque shot here of all these gunships taking off, and, you know, with these sort of this sort of tropical or subtropical.
I'm gonna say that that's probably purposeful.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, because that makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, especially if you've seen Apocalypse Now, for example, or if you've seen Platoon or Full Metal Jacket, you know, some of the, you know, the visuals, you know, of course, I remember, you know, talking to my dad about it, what it was like when he was in country, you know, and he said, there are just certain scenes that you just evoke the sound of Huey's,
right?
you know, coming in for a landing or taking off, and that's what this evokes to me. So, but yeah, you know, solid ending. I think it just dragged a little. Not in the flashback, but in the intro and outro,
right? And the thing here is, all of the morals of each story thus far have been pretty easy to follow. This one, I didn't really find an obvious lesson that we were supposed to be learning from this.
To me, the lesson I took away from it was to always aid creatures that are smaller than you.
Okay, and maybe that was it. It's always been spelled out a little more explicitly in the other issues. And that's why I was a little, and to say I was let down by this issue is an overstatement, but it, like I said, I did enjoy it. It just didn't, it seemed like it was from a different series to me.
Yeah. Cause you know, I'm not going to say it was below par. I'm not going to say it was, you know, worse than the least of the previous right. four or five. Not, that's not the case at all. I just, you know, the only way I can really describe it is what I said, you know, at the top of the review was it lacked some of that oomph that I'd gotten used
to. And if that's the worst you can say about it, you know, I think that's a credit to everyone involved. Cause like I said, as a standalone issue, I really did enjoy it. And I especially, I enjoyed the story, but like you said, the execution of it was just a little off somehow. But again, you know, it's a decent ending to this story. I'm glad that we finally got the end of it. I'm just sorry that we had to wait so long for it.
Me too. But here's the thing. I'm glad IDW did this. I'm glad the pitch got approved. And I want to see more of this. You know, I mean, this has the potential, I think, to be kind of like a Vader's castle penboard, if you will. You know, and that we could come back to have more battle tales. You know, whether it's, one shots or three issue minis or another five issue mini. You know, I want to see more of this. I enjoyed it a lot.
I did too. So that's going to do it for the reviews. What have we got for next week?
Well, October 7th, we have a new debut. Star Wars Adventures Volume 2, Number 1 is slated to hit store shelves, as well as Star Wars Number 7 from Marvel, which, if memory serves, is the start of a new arc for that series. And for the manga fans, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Volume 1 from Hope Yen Press is due out as well. And that is, I believe, an adaptation of the YA novel. So, fun.
Yeah, so yeah, some good stuff for us to discuss.
Indeed. Although we will not probably be doing the manga since,
right.
You know, it's nothing against manga. It's just, it's a little bit out of our purview.
Right, exactly. Not within the scope of what we talk about. So we'll be back next week to discuss those. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Jeff, thank you for having me.
For Star Wars Splash Page, I'm Jeff.
And I am still Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!